Blog Talk Radio.
Stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining NASCA tonight. We are going to have such a great show tonight. Every Tuesday and Thursdays, we have an open night, mic night forum. And tonight's special guest and host with us is Barbara Joy Hansen, a.k.a. Bobby Joy, who I call her by. She's such a beautiful person with great news, by the way. You know, this is what NASCA does, okay? NASCA is the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, NAASCA. And at NASCA, we basically have a purpose here, and we focus on child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. Okay, so we have a single purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals. The first one, educating the public. This show in particular will be so much related to that topic by itself. It's just going to be such a wonderful, wonderful show. And that's what we do. I mean, we want to educate the public, and especially, you know, as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing it. You know, anything that would to do with CSA or child sexual abuse, it seems in the past that it was such a hard topic to bring into the household, around the environment. You know, and this is what NASCA is doing. We're helping open up those doors so people can talk more about it and take care of the crisis that we all demand here. And we want to also, by, you know, presenting facts showing child abuse to be it's a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. So the second is offering hope and healing. NASCA does this better than anyone that I know, due to the fact that not only with our guests tonight, but with everyone that participates here at NASCA, we have numerous tasks. We provide many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information, okay, for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And in order for you to learn more about NASCA, you can go into our website at www.nasca.org. And in there, right on the first page, you're going to find contact lists. Everyone that's on this show, you could pretty well get through the numbers, volunteers, ambassadors, anything that you need. So tonight's show is going to be just a great show. Our guest tonight, by the way, is Barbara Joy Hansen, and she is such a beautiful family member here at NASCA. She's from Milford, Massachusetts, okay, and she has an award-winning memoir. It's called Listen to the Cry of the Child. So this describes her childhood world of violence, okay. She was victimized at age two to eight, okay, by her grandfather. Sexually assaulted at 11 and 12 by her youth pastor, and she was raped at 18. She suffered sexual addictions in her marriage, causing severe complex trauma, resulting with PTSD and many other issues, because we all can relate to that. Bob, we really can. I mean, it affects every single one of us. So after 38 years, Bobby Joy now facilitates Beauty Out of Ashes support group. So she's had many, many media interviews. She's been on NASCA. She's been on the Dr. Oz show. And she is just a beautiful humanitarian aid worker. And we need, you know, more of your kind of people in the world. But anyway, I want to bring Bobby Joy in. And also I'm going to open up the mics. We have two other callers here, Bobby. So I'm going to open up the mics for everyone tonight. And after that, we can...
Right now. But I thought I had been scheduled for tonight. I thought Barbara had scheduled me for tonight.
Hello.
Hi, who are you speaking with?
This is Bob Marzullo. I thought I'd been scheduled to speak tonight.
Yeah, you're not
that's
tonight.
Okay.
It's an open
not,
mic forum.
Not
that's
tonight.
You can speak all you want.
Yeah, you can share in the panel discussion tonight. Is it who is it?
I'm going to say no because I'm at work right now with my clients, so it'd be best not for me to do that. So that and I've never been part of the panel discussion, so we
but
can postpone
can
it to
be.
Another thing.
Well,
I can't. I'm at work right now.
Are you wanting to share your story tonight?
I was invited to that. I did it last night with Bill and that on his show, and that I thought I had been scheduled for tonight by Barbara.
I mentioned to you that we're having a panel discussion tonight, and you're more than welcome to call and share some of your story.
I can't tonight. I'm at work with my client and her husband. So that,
okay.
If that I was going to do that, do a speak while working, but if that's not so, I will. I've read Barbara's book. It's wonderful.
Uh-huh.
So that
okay.
But that,
well, I want to let you know that
this is okay.
This is John. I'm the host, and you are more than welcome.
Yep.
You are more than welcome to say whatever you want to say tonight. If you were prepared to say something, hey, let's talk about it. That's what we're here for.
You know, how about we reschedule it?
I can reschedule it anytime you want. Anytime you want to. So,
okay.
What was your name?
Robert, or I go by Bob Marzullo, Marzullo, and I live in Shoreline, Washington.
Shoreline, okay. Sure. I'll tell you what, I have your number right here. Can I call you later and we can set up a time if you want to do that? I wish you'd stay with us tonight, but you can't. That's perfectly understandable.
Yes.
You know, in fact,
it's trying to do two things at once.
But Bob, we were looking forward to your call. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, we were looking forward to your call, but thank you for calling.
Okay. Take care then. Get back.
Okay. Have a good night.
Get
so
back.
We also have a area code. Let's see. I guess that was his. Okay. I see Annie's with us. Hi, Annie. How are you?
I agree. How are you tonight, John?
Good. That was a little unexpected. that's okay, though. You know, I guess he wasn't prepared to stay, so that's okay. But let me see. That's 2-5. Okay. All right. Sorry about that. Anyway, we had a guest call in, and he wasn't prepared that it was going to be an open mic or panel discussion night. So that's okay. I wish he'd listened to the show anyway because we have a lot to talk about. We really do. And, you know, like I said, our guest tonight is Bobby Joy. And so we're going to get right into it, Bobby. So what would you like to first of all talk about? Would you like to talk a little bit about your history so everyone can, maybe touch on that just briefly so they can get a good idea in your own words?
Okay. That fellow, I was hoping that he would stay on. What I don't understand is if he shared his story last night, why would he think that he'd come back on and do it again tonight when I made it very clear that it was a panel discussion? But evidently he was at work.
Maybe that was hard.
He can
still listen to the show. I hope he is listening to the show, actually, because if he wants to come tell a story, really another night would be the night. But however, if he's ready, I think we were all ready. And I was hoping he'd stay on the phone. I really was. But we have a lot to talk about still. Yeah. So what's on your mind?
Well, I don't mind sharing a little bit of my own story, but I really wanted to go into a little bit different direction tonight in starting the show. I don't know how each of you were raised in your own home by your mother and your father. I did have a wonderful home, a Christian home. I'm a pastor's daughter, and my mother and father loved me dearly. Like you said, my grandfather, when we would go to his house in New York State, would do unthinkable things to himself and to me when I was little. And at age 8, I shut down from him, and I never hugged him or, went to him again or went out with him. My mother always, she was abused too by him, but because of the post-traumatic stress disorder, she couldn't protect me, which is deep, deep trauma. It's like traumatic amnesia. You just can't. And I didn't have words. I was too little. But at age 8, I figured out, I didn't know what was up, but I knew something wasn't right. And I shut down from him, and I never went near him again. That stopped the abuse, but he lived to be 101. And I was hoping he'd die, to be honest with you, and I didn't go to the funeral, and I was afraid my mother would wonder why, and she never asked me. So down deep, she knew, and I confronted her when she was 83 years old, and I've written it in detail in my book, Listen to the Cry of the Child. And if you want a personally signed copy, you can go on my website, listentothecry.org, or you can call me at 508-473-1280, and I will personalize the copy and send it to you. And some people want family members to read it because they have nothing to do with certain family members that don't understand and don't want to hear it, and they have me anonymously send it to that family member, and they have no idea, it's from that person. So you can kind of do it, that way as well. And then I went to a youth camp in New York State and was sodomized and molested by a 27-year-old clergy when I was 11. He came back the following summer at age 12, and he molested a lot of my pastors, a lot of my friends who were also pastors' daughters. And I went through a sex abuse case and faced him in 1999. With four of my friends, me and three others, four of us. And it wasn't something I set out to do. It was not something I wanted to do. But I saw a best friend at the camp that hadn't had courage to come back for 27 years. And she and I connected like glue. And I found out it happened to her. And the ball started rolling. And we called some of our friends. And they set up a committee of discipline for him and restoration for us and flew us to Florida to face him. And it was the hardest thing, but it was the most healing for me to walk in that room as hard as it was. And I had panic attacks like you wouldn't believe, and saw this disheveled-looking addict in front of me and a psychologist sat next to me, and he was on his right with eight clergy that led us through this sex abuse case. And 7 weeks later, I got a phone call from the head of the committee telling me he fell down the stairs and broke his back and died. So he had a 7-week window to get right, whether he did or not. That's between him and God, and I'm not his judge or jury, and I never could have written my book had I not come home and immediately gotten down with pen and paper and put the facts together, and that is also in my book, the whole thing that I went through. Raped at 18. I said no to my boyfriend, college-age boyfriend I was in love with. My father married us, and his eyes got him in trouble, my husband's, because of women, because of his father's suicide. And he couldn't cope with it. He couldn't talk about it. He didn't for 40 years. And here I was shot down for 38. So, you know, we raised our 3 boys and acted like our home was normal. And in a way, it was probably good because we had a good, happy home with the 3 boys, with skateboard ramp in the backyard and a swimming pool. So that's some of my story. And it created... I couldn't start my period. I could not conceive a child. My body literally shut down and shut off until I faced the clergy and chose to forgive him, and then learned that he fell down the stairs and broke his back and died. And then I wrote my book in a week using pain journals that I kept hidden, that I was afraid somebody would find if I died. And I started writing, and I couldn't stop. And my book was written in 1 week. So that's a little bit of my story. So I don't know if somebody wants to...
That's a very good point, though, that you made about you and your friends. You know, I mean, it took somebody to step up and do something. And you were the one that initiated, you know. And that is so important, that at least somebody did something. And then you found a good friend. And then look what happened. Y'all made something happen. You know, that's what it's all about right there. That's very beautiful and brave. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was brave, and it wasn't anything that I would have done had I not seen that friend at the campground. And I have another best friend there that has gone through a lot more than I did, even with things in her life. But we reconnect every year, so I'm very blessed to have a friend there. We have a cabin there, and we go there every summer and spend, you know, some time at the lake. But how I wanted to start out tonight was about, and I wished that Robert had stayed on, or Bob, because I don't know about his dad, but or any of you, how your dad was in your home. But I want to talk about the father wound. Because of my upbringing, I had a good father, and he protected me. But he couldn't protect me all the time. He didn't know what happened. I couldn't tell him. But a lot of inmates, and I'm in prison ministry, and I know a lot of people that have gone through abuse go into that kind of a prison work, and I never really would have chosen to be in prison ministry, except that we met some of our friends had a young man, their son was in prison, and we went we went more than once, but we went and met him, and he was stronger in God than we were, because he had all this time to read his Bible and work out, and, you know, he wasn't doing drugs, and we didn't know why he was in there. But then he started writing letters to me, and that's the dark part of my story, is getting, being very, very vulnerable before I healed with a male prostitute, junkie, heroin junkie, and of course I didn't know all that, and he started writing letters to me. And I started responding. And the neat thing about it is they would go to the crack house where he was, because the day we delivered him out of prison, to one of his relatives, he went back to the crack house and started using, and he was a major drug dealer. And we took him in and out of our house over an eight-year period. And I don't really talk about that too much, but that's one of the reasons I got involved with prison ministry, is because every time he'd get out of prison, he'd call the house and ask if we could help him. And I never turned him down. I always said, yes, I'll try to find a drug rehab. And sometimes he'd live with us and get a job and try to get him in a, you know, rehab. But the reason I wanted to talk about the father wound is because 85% of men in prison today grow up in a fatherless home. They grow up, and that's an astonishing statistic, they grow up either without a father or a father that was maybe in prison themselves or alcoholic or drug addict, and they had no male role model, where I did and my husband did until his father took his life. My husband was only 27, and we had two young kids at that time, and that was a horrible tragedy as well. So my husband had a father wound. But when I go and I speak in prison, I share in chapel my story. I share part of it, and I weave it with one of the parables in Scripture, perhaps like Lazarus coming out of the tomb. I call it dead man walking. And Jesus said to Lazarus' friends, will you loose him and let him go? Well, NASCA is doing that in loosening our bondage, our, you know, the things we've gone through. They're helping us. We are helping each other to get free. And we're giving answers and awareness. But a lot of the men in prison, they don't have these kind of answers. And they don't know how to be a better man, husband, or father. And so one time I went in, and there was a man, around a 60-year-old man in a wheelchair. And he said, I haven't talked to my kids in 30 years. How do I reconnect with them? What do I say? What if they don't let me? And that's a hard answer. Hard question to answer. And another inmate said, "Wow, you've helped me understand a little more about myself and my own behavior by sharing your testimony, your story, and that's powerful." He said, "When I get out, I'd like to do things differently with my own kids." And so that's, you know, we hear their stories, and this inmate wrote me his, and most of the men had no father or one that was a very bad example. So I guess I'm wondering, before I read a little bit of the father wound, the father soul, the wound of our soul, I'd like to know how you grew up. How did you have a good role model?
Well, I'll tell you, that is, I just couldn't wait to start chomping at the bit on this one. Because I'm going to tell you, it has probably been, I would have to say, the most versatile and roller coaster ride of my life, okay?
Really?
However, it had a lot of low points, okay? But it's had a lot of high points, too, okay? And the majority of these high points are definitely coming, you know, later on in life, okay? And I can't really say that I blame my father for anything. So, without generally just giving you that answer, I want to tell you why. And this is what it is with me. So, you know, we are so similar, Bobby, and things that happen. Just to clarify before I tell you this part is that the guy who was a deacon who raped me, he also died before he had a chance that I had a chance to face him as a man. Okay, it was getting ready to happen. You know, he raped 26 kids after me. My parents, and this is where my dad comes in. My parents and I took this man to court in 1978. Okay, I was now turning 10 years old. All right, I'm facing my rapist across from me in a courtroom directly. And he was acquitted. by the way, okay?
Wow.
And I had two eyewitnesses and a whole classroom full of students, and the school knew what was going on with me. Everybody, the whole neighborhood, I mean, the community knew what was happening to me, okay? And he still got acquitted. Well,
wow.
Here's the issue getting, you know, with my father with this, is that, you know, after I found out that Deacon Brignett was still up to no good, you know, we finally got everybody together. I came forward on the news. Then it was just a chaotic scene of people that came forward against this one particular individual, okay? 26 after me. I was the very first that I knew of, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So and I was the only one that ever took him to court, okay? Well, we had no chance back then. Who takes on the Archdiocese in 1978, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. So we suffered. I mean, we suffered in the community. I lost all my friends, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Now my dad. The whole time that we were going through what I would call, it's not even depositions, it would be more like questioning terms.
Mm-hmm.
What they were doing with us, they issued us nine different subpoenas for this case. And at the time, my mom was in her third trimester of her pregnancy, by the way, okay,
mm-hmm.
with my younger brother, who's, you know, 11 years younger than me, right? Okay. So that comes into play, too. Well, the whole time that they were subpoenaing us, they thought they were going to run us off, you know. And so my mom never, never, ever gave up. She did everything that she did. I mean, she had him arrested in school, okay. She went to all the subpoenas. She did everything. I mean, just a warrior, okay? And I still have all these documentations today. Well, the whole time that this was going on, my dad, okay, yes, he was there, but he didn't really do anything back then, you know, for us. Yeah, the support was there. And at the time, me and my dad really weren't, I would have to say, super close at that time. I mean, we were fairly, it was a good relationship, okay? But when that happened, everybody's life just got turned upside down, including
right.
my parents' and mine. And I have a younger sister. My younger sister actually saw him molesting me in class. You know what the students used to do? They used to climb the garbage cans. They would flip the garbage can upside down, stand on top of it, and look through the glass transoms in the hallway into the classroom and watch him molest me. And this went on for 3 weeks. 3 weeks before he finally got caught doing it, and my friends told somebody. I couldn't tell. He was threatening me. This is my point. This is my point with this, is that my dad didn't really do anything back then. And it upset me for years because my mindset, you know, growing up, I'm, you know, fairly tough guy, you know, I'm just thinking, I'm talking in general as a man.
Right.
If anything happened to my son or my daughter like that, you know, I'm one of these people where, and a lot of men would back this up, they'd go after him, you know,
right.
and physically take care of it, you know. And that's the way things really used to be back then. Dads,
I know.
If you mess with their kids, they went after you. Because the police, that they, you know, they, the laws weren't the same back then. Nowadays, if you even say anything like that, you're going to jail instead of them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well,
that
that's interesting that you say that your father didn't
hit hard.
Yeah, well, my father, when I told my dad about the clergy, my dad didn't either. He didn't do anything. I mean, he cried.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wept for me. But being a clergy,
mm-hmm.
I thought he could. But you know what? They didn't teach anything about in seminary. They didn't teach how to protect children. They didn't teach how to support victims. So, you know, your father didn't know how to help you.
Exactly. He didn't know how to help. But I have to reemphasize, I don't want to paint a bad picture of him because of that, okay?
Right.
We had a whole different lifestyle. And basically, we bred dogs. We had pet care facilities, two businesses going. And you have to stay there the entire time when you're dealing with that kind of – I mean, you basically have a school, except it's
right.
animals. you know, and it has to be, you know, so he's very busy. Now, keep in mind, you know, as the years went on, the more and more I got seriously traumatized. I wound up going to 6 different schools out of this. And we had a lot of arguments, man, you know, a lot of stuff. And I would throw that back at him. I'd make him feel bad and say, Dad, why didn't you go kick his, you know what? And this,
right.
You know, and I'd use that against him because I was angry at myself.
Sure you
I
were.
I was angry at the world, you know, and I was taking it out on him. And, you know, I have since apologized to him, and I love him, dude, you know. And he's done a lot for me a little late. I will say this, you know, over the past 5-6 years, you know, since I've been doing my advocacy work and everything else, that he has tried everything he can possibly do to contact people, to learn, to get involved, to help in any way he possibly can, you know. So, you know, I have to look at both sides of the table here, you know. It's that, yes, it was rough, and yes, it still is, can be rough, believe me. However, by what you're bringing up tonight to me is such an important step in someone's life when they grow and they become warriors and they become teachers and life coaches. You have to cross these barriers. And how you get over these barriers, Bobby, you know how tough this is. You know how tough this is. Everybody listening knows how tough that is. But
sure do.
What happens? It makes you so stronger, so much stronger in the long run. And then you start helping people.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. That's a powerful story. How about you, Annie? Did you grow up with a father that supported you?
No. My father was a really horrible person. And he sexually assaulted me from the time I was 3. And also assaulted my brothers and sisters. And he was a horrible person. And I did not talk to him like for years. I would be in the same room, but I wouldn't talk to him. And I mean, really, my whole adult life, I wouldn't. I would see him and stuff, but I would never talk to him. And I have to say, he continued to do inappropriate things and say inappropriate things to me. His whole life. He never quit. So yeah, no father figure, and sadly, I think that I treated husbands the way my mother treated him, which was she punished him all the time because she knew what was going on, and so she was always yelling at him and stuff. And I didn't turn into a yeller, but I did have that attitude that the husband is wrong. So that was very damaging to me.
Incest is the worst form of abuse that anybody could go through because it's the boundaries are crossed. You become, it's like the enjoyment of your body becomes the hatred of your soul. Pleasure versus poison, desire versus terror leaves the victim powerless and filled with shame. And in the heart of every person attracted to children is a very lost child. So perhaps something bad happened in your father's childhood or in my grandfather or, you know, the people that have abused us, and they create twisted boundaries to prey upon children. And our childhood is lost. I just completely, as you did, and I'm sure John did, completely shut down with an inability to exist in an adult world. And so I created a fantasy with my friend, and her brother molested her, and we shared that secret together, but that was the only one that I ever told. And then we reconnected in our adult life together. But there's a very, very heavy cost of sexual abuse. And it doesn't have to be intercourse at all. It can be fondling, stimulation, or, you know, people's responses vary. The effects are intensified if the abuse is within an authority or a family member, and it's intensified if the abuse happens over a long period of time, as is mine did too. And then we have trouble sleeping, we have nightmares, we have depression, low self-esteem, school problems. I studied and studied for tests, and then when I went to take the test, because of the memory blocks, do you think I could answer the questions? No. My memory, even today, my memory isn't great. I can't believe I wrote a book, and a pretty good one at that. But we have extreme anger, eating disorders, hostility, aggression, kids run away from home, physical problems. Like I said, I couldn't start my period, and we couldn't conceive a child, so we adopted. And then I got pregnant. But I didn't have a clue, that this started way back then when I was only two. So I'm glad that I brought this subject up tonight. And I would like to read something. It's not too long to read, but I think you'll understand it, and it'll help you, John. It's from a book called Wild at Heart, and it's The Wound of Our Soul. Little Billy's mother was always telling him exactly what he was allowed to do and what he couldn't do. All the things he was allowed to do was boring. All the things he was not allowed to do were exciting. One of those things he was never, ever allowed to do, and the most exciting of all, was to go out through the garden gate all by himself and explore the world beyond. He was wounded. The story of Adam's fall is very much man's story. Every man comes into the world set up for a loss of his heart. Adam's story becomes our story. It's a wound in the soul. Every boy in his journey to become a man takes an arrow in the center of his heart, in the place of his strength. Because the wound is rarely discussed and even more rarely healed, every man carries a wound, and the wound is nearly always given by his father. In order to understand how a man receives the wound, he must understand the central truth of a boy's journey to manhood. Masculinity is bestowed. A boy learns who he is and what he's got from a man or the company of men. He can't learn it from any other place. He can't learn it from other boys or from the world of women. The plan from the beginning of time was that his father would lay the foundation for a young boy's heart and pass on to him that essential knowledge and confidence in his strength. Dad would be the first man in his life and forever the most important one. Above all, he would answer the question for his son and give him his name. Throughout the history of man given to us in Scripture, it's the father who gives the blessings to his son. Adam received his name from God and passed it on to his sons. A boy is brought into the world by his mother, so she's the center of his universe in those first tender months and years. She suckles him, nurtures him, protects him, sings to him, reads to him, watches over him like a mother hen. But when her relationship is void with her husband, her mate, she may turn her affections to her son. There's a shift for her affection and attention. If she has let go of her husband, she asks the son to fill the void in her soul that her husband has left. The boy develops an unnatural bond with his mother, and that is an emotional, like emotional incest. And I when I read that, I'm like, I just got chills. That's why Scripture says, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, Genesis 2:24. Feminism can never replace masculinity. Masculinity is an essence that a boy naturally craves as he craves food and water. It is something passed between a boy and his father. When the mother clings, the boy will try to tear himself away violently as he gets older. This typically comes in the teenage years and often involves some ugly behavior, maybe foul words on the part of the man, young man. She feels rejected. He feels guilty, but he knows that he must get away. Many adult men resent their mothers but can't say why. They simply know they don't want to be close to them, so they rarely call. He senses that being close to his mother endangers his masculine journey as though he might be sucked back in. It could be an irrational or real fear, but it reveals that both essential ingredients in this passage were missing. Mom didn't let go, and Dad didn't help make him into a man. These are defining passages in a young man's life. The assault wounds are like a shotgun blast to the chest. This can get unspeakably evil when it involves physical, sexual, or verbal abuse carried on for years. Without some kind of help, many men never fully recover. One thing about the assault wounds, they are obvious. The passive wounds are not, like a cancer. Because they're subtle, they often go unrecognized as wounds and therefore are actually more difficult to heal. Not receiving any blessing from your father is an injury to your soul. Not seeing your father when you're small, never being with him, having a remote or an absent father or workaholic father is an injury. A boy can't understand why his father's missing in action. Some fathers give a wound merely by their silence. They are present yet absent to their sons. The silence is deafening. Sometimes it brings so much guilt to a son for having such a desire. All his son wants is for his father to validate the wound. No one could see the wound or understand the scars because they're hidden. Every man carries a wound because we live in a broken world of broken people. Your mother is the daughter of Eve, and your dad is the son of Adam. Every wound, whether it's assaultive or passive, delivers with it a message. The message feels final and true because it's delivered with such force. Our reaction to it reshapes our personality in very significant ways. From that flows the false sense of self. Most men you meet are living out a false self, a posse, which is directly related to his wound. The message given to a son is, you're on your own. There's no one in your corner, no one to show you the way, and above all, no one to tell you if you are or not a man. The core question of your soul has no answer and can never get one. Then a man will live that vow out, I don't need anyone. Above all, the wound was deep and unhealed, and the message it brought seems so final. I'm on my own. I don't need anybody. From that place, the boy makes a vow and chooses a way of life that will rise to the false self. At the core of all of it is a deep insecurity. That man doesn't live from the center. So many men feel trapped and stuck and paralyzed and unable to move and unable to stop moving. The father wound.
Wow. Boy, that's deep.
Does that hit home?
Yes, that is deep, I'm telling you. You know, every time that you went in to a different angle of describing the situation, it reminded me of a lot. It really, really did. You know what I started thinking about, too, was that if you look at the different scenarios of, say, the three different ways, and I'll put it this way, either the father was abused, okay,
right,
or the son was abused, or daughter, okay, or both, okay?
Yeah.
So that affects all sides of it if you really want to think about it, you know, the personality.
It can affect the girl, too, with a mother wound. I mean,
yes.
If the mother's that, you could put it in that scenario, too.
Yeah. I can, you know, definitely relate with that, absolutely, you know. And it's weird, you know, that you brought that up because it's absolutely true in my life. There's no question about it, you know. I love my mom so much, you know, and it's just that, you know, we have a hard time. I have a hard time really getting close to her, you know what I'm saying? It's not that I don't want to. It's just the way I am, you know, and she's always been there. She's always going to be there. And we have a good relationship. However, you know, like you said, it's very true, the fact that I think that because of what happened to me in my life early, you
right.
know, that it affected the way of how much that I want to be affectionate you know, mm-hmm. toward her, you know, and my dad, to be honest, you know. I just have, you know, these feelings, I guess, of when something you trusted in your life, you know, hurts you the most, then you
right.
are just on full-time alert, full-time negative, full-time back. However, you know, there's a boundary, you know, to a lot of us that were abused with our parents, so to speak, with that relationship with our dad and mom. And
mm-hmm.
and some of those boundaries, it's not that they won't let you come into theirs. It's you won't let them come into yours a lot of time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's on both sides. You know, you have
right.
to look at it. Some survivors I've heard, and let's, you know, look at Annie's situation, you know. She never had that opportunity, you know, which is
right.
really so sad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
However, some people do. And some parents won't let them in. Some do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, then it's the opposite. Sometimes it's one and not both. You know, then it causes a lot of trauma within the household, you know. So very important topic. Yes, it is.
I thought that part that I read about, if you have that unnatural bond with a mother, it's like emotional incest. I've often wondered, and my husband won't talk about it because he's a very introverted person, and he's gone through something that I didn't, except it did affect our whole family with a suicide.
Mm-hmm.
I know he felt close to his mother, and his father took his life. And I know my husband told me at one time that when he was 14, I mean, he'd gone to youth camp, and he didn't want to go when he was 14 because he was, you know, getting older and wanted to stay home and be with his friends. But they made him go because they were going for counseling, and I kind of
mm-hmm.
dug it out of him. I'm like, really? What'd they go for marriage counseling? So they were having problems in their marriage. My husband looked at pornography, and I 100% believe his father did too. And I believe his father cheated on his mother. So when I read that part, I wondered, and I have wondered for years, emotional incest. I don't mean anything really happened, but my husband did tell me that when his father was traveling, he slept in his mother's bed. Now, that wasn't natural. I don't know how old he was, but to me, that wasn't natural.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it does bring up a lot of questions. Annie, do you have any thoughts?
Well, I definitely have a father wound and a mother wound.
Mm.
I think because, you know, as a woman, the father shapes the child in a lot of ways and prepares you for the future relationships. And so I wasn't prepared at all for future relationships because love was abuse.
Right.
And so that's what I ended up with.
Yes. Oftentimes you go from one man to the other man to the other man. Because you haven't been
yeah.
told how to act, and you have no boundaries. You don't even know what a boundary is.
Right.
You know? Yep. It's,
I know this.
It's sad.
Today in the news that we've been talking about this is that there was a situation that happened. There was a woman that walked in to her boyfriend, fiance, so to speak, found him in bed with a 7-year-old girl, and she tracked him down. He ran, and she tracked him down in New Orleans, and stayed with him until the police arrested him.
Good.
It's all over the news today. Very proud.
Wow.
You know. Yeah.
Yes.
It just happened like about 3 hours ago, and I'm like, wow.
Really.
Know? Right here. Yep. Yep. Unbelievable. You know.
Well, I walked in on my husband when he was in bed with my brother's wife. And that
Aww.
Is in my book.
Oh, man.
And my husband has been healed. My brother has been healed and divorced her. She was a hoe. Slept with every Tom, Dick, and Harry. And God's healed it. and my brother and my husband are best friends. And that's in my book without naming anybody's
mm-hmm.
name. And my sister-in-law, ex-sister-in-law, is an alcoholic, demented in a nursing home and doesn't know who she is. So, you
really?
Know, it's really sad, but God does restore the brokenhearted and sets prisoners free. You know, we can't change our past. C.S. Lewis says you can't go back and change the beginning of your story, but you can start where you are and change the ending. And I like that.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Yes.
Which is
and
really
you know what's good about this, though, is that when you look at the different situations when people are first coming out, okay, and they
right.
are opening up, and they're learning that they're not alone. And you know, especially the males and the men out here, you know, who are scared. They're, you know,
oh, yeah.
they're in their middle age, you know. The average
mm-hmm.
age is 52,
yeah.
you know. And I understand.
Right.
And I know exactly why. And people
so
say, well, you
yeah.
know, why is that? You know, well, there are so many answers to that one number that, now listen, you're talking about just a general number here, okay. It's not going to fluctuate too much from that, but now that doesn't mean that you're not 65 or 70, right? And it doesn't mean that you're not 22,
mm-hmm.
you know? So what I'm worried about is the ones that are in their 20s and 30s, okay, that are out there, they're needing, you know, a way to get this darkness out of their soul. They don't know how to do it. And what I'm
no.
worried about is if they don't and they wait and how their life can turn out and probably will, because almost every person that I know who has been a victim of childhood sex abuse, okay,
mm-hmm.
develops serious long-term effects.
Exactly.
Whether it be mentally, physically, spiritually, all the way down the line, okay?
Yeah.
And it doesn't usually start hitting them until they're up in age. They just don't know it yet.
Right, because you've blocked it out.
That's right. And the fact that now they're growing up and getting older, right? They're raising families. They're even in the community very
mm-hmm.
heavy, say, in the Catholic or any religious organization, right? And the kids are growing up. They're in school. And the whole time, they just can't live with themselves anymore over the fact that they were sexually abused. And it keeps getting at them day after day after day until they finally decide to do something about it.
Mm.
When they could have done something about it a long, long, long time ago, you know. And those are the ones I'm so worried about because I know what it's like, you know. But now that there are so many you know, that have come forward. And there's so many people just like you and Annie and everyone that's out here that can help you, you know, along the way. See, times are changing. And this is what NASCA does to everybody and along with you too, you know. I mean, this is what we need. And it's just like Bob that called in. I was looking forward to talking with him, you know.
Mm.
And I would encourage
anyone.
Well,
you know, will.
Anyone,
you'll but, reach out to him.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and you know what?
Speaking of that,
I'd like you to have him listen to the show because I think I'm almost 100% sure that this show would help him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope he's listening. He may not be, but anyway, you know what's so important though to understand is that you know first of all you're not alone, okay? And everybody's story, okay, may be different, and there's no one story that's more horrific than the other. But you are within family, okay? Now, there's a lot of things out here to look at, you know, and a lot of things that need to be done to get yourself right. So
mm-hmm.
the first step is to pick that phone up and call, you know.
Right.
Our guest call-in number here is 646-595-2118. And you can call that number any day of the week, you know. But you know, tonight, you know, we're talking about, you know, things to do with your father and your mother and things that, you know, overcoming a lot of difficult situations, you know, being sex abuse survivors with each, you know, in the different scenarios. It really is an important subject.
I got a question, John. Did you have counseling?
Yes.
Did you go through therapy?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I didn't.
Yes.
My therapy was given, I was given a New International Recovery Devotional, 12-step AA-based
mm-hmm.
Bible from the heroin addict before he went back to prison. And that Bible literally changed my life because I'd never read a Bible that had things in it about addictions and fear and shame
mm-hmm.
and all the different things that are, you know, woven in that
mm-hmm.
particular teaching. Working with survivors, and most of them were former prostitutes or former addicts, that, and then speaking about it, well, writing my book, too, and facing the clergy. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's been my lifeline, so to speak, and then coming on
mm-hmm.
NASCA. But recovery, we need recovery. Recovery is so possible, and it's necessary to realizing, okay, I didn't cause this to happen. You were a victim. You don't have to remain a victim. You can
mm-hmm.
you can come out of it. And grieving for me was a huge, huge part of realizing I was a lost little lamb. I was a lost sheep. And when I wrote my book, I couldn't stop grieving. I couldn't stop weeping. And realizing, you know, boundaries were crossed, betrayal of trust, loss of power. Sexual abuse is not about, it's about lust, it's power and control. It's not about sex. It's completely the opposite. And I don't know, you know, if that person that molested you has gone through it themselves. I have no idea about my grandfather. I know my uncle was also a pedophile, so my grandfather could have got him first before he got to us girls. My cousins and I were molested, and my mother was too. So the roots are anchored in your childhood, have to be uncovered in order to face the past and live. And the moment one person confesses their wrongdoing to another, or even the victim tells somebody else, the bond of secrecy is finally broken, and the weight of the shame is lifted, even if it's just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to go through moral outrage. This should not happen, and you have to get angry, and that's part of the grieving process, reliving
yeah.
the guilt and maybe writing down the memories, which is what I did. That's why I journaled, and I'm glad
mm-hmm.
I did, because that's why my book was written so quickly. I went back and I thought, oh my goodness, I've got it all here, and I couldn't stop writing.
And that's very important to me too, Bobby, is that I have always done that, and
good.
I found that it was one way for me not only to write down what I was thinking at the time, okay, but it
mm-hmm.
also helped me, you know, to reflect back on some of those things and say, you know, I forgot about this.
Right.
It's very important. But at the time I was writing it down, it, you know, I didn't think about it. But however,
no.
the next day or maybe 3 days later, I'm like, you know what, why didn't I put that down? So what that's doing, you know, for me is that it's helping me, you know, to identify what happened to me and to write it down and
mm-hmm.
to help, you know, educate what happened to me along with what I do now. Because
mm-hmm.
without having to write things down is that I will never be able, you know, to really reflect on the situation, okay? And that's what it's all about. It's about the situation itself. It's about educating. It's about helping other people that may have gone and probably did go through that same situation.
Right.
You know? And without writing the details down, is that there's a lot of things can slip by, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then you may go in a whole nother area of your abuse, which could be the physical side or the
mm-hmm.
mental side, or depending on what you're discussing, and without you writing that other stuff down, you know, you're going to be bouncing back and forth, you know, too much. That's why I like to put everything in certain areas where I can reflect why I was traumatized by this. Or, you know, in other words, yes, I was sexually abused, but, you know, what about the physical abuse? What about that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I have wires in my body now. I've had wires in my body since I've been 47 years old. That's not normal, you know?
Mm.
I have a diseased spine, you know? I mean, this don't happen, you know, to people. I have fibromyalgia. I have, you name it. I mean, I have serious nerve damage. Permanent.
Right.
It's permanent. You know, so I have to live with this the rest of my life. But what I can do, though, is that I can help, you know, better myself by educating myself and helping other people, you know, with the same, you know, situations that come into their lives. And that happens every day, every single day with me, it does.
Well, I don't think you can learn enough. I'm like a sponge. I want to know why they molest. I want to know what goes on in their minds. You know, I mean, I've been in prison conferences and spoken in workshops with a former sex offender, and that was powerful because I wanted to know his story. And he told me afterwards, he said, well, they came to hear you, not me. And I said, no, I came to hear you and why you did what you did. He said, well, I was molested. But you don't grow up and say, oh, I want to be a child molester when I grow up. But he did end up abusing the same age. I think they were like 11 or 12 year olds. And he said, I could go outside the hotel from the prison conference and get a little boy just like that. But he said, I have to get down on my knees or, you know, almost like an alcohol or sex addiction. You've got to ask God to take that thought away. Because it starts in your mind, in your head first, and then it goes down into your heart, and then you act out.
Wow.
And the more traumas you go through, the deeper it goes. I call it like Swiss cheese. If you've had a child that gets hit by a car, or a sister that runs out and gets hit by a car, or dog dies, or whatever traumas you've gone through, the deeper it goes. And I don't know about you or Annie, but I've got deep compassion because of what I've gone through. That's a gift that very few have. And I'm blessed that I have that gift. I also have a gift to be able to sense things sometimes before they happen. And I think that's funny because I do work with drug dealers and drug addicts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't bring them into the house anymore. We learned, you know, what not to do. But I believe God allowed that for a time for me to get inside his world and him get inside mine and me understand what in the world, you know. I mean, he overdosed and died on the streets of Boston in 2005, he read my book and then he overdosed and died. And I believe God allowed that to happen because now I'm in prison ministry and I speak worldwide in prisons all over the world. And when we went to the Philippines for 2 months with my violence prevention work, we went in female prisons and male prisons, and I gave a sermon on demons and spiritual warfare that was a very heavy sermon, and I had never given that before. And I had one inmate kneel down by my feet. He just could not stop weeping. And I touched something in his soul and just giving, you know, about satanic type things. And you know what goes on behind closed doors and behind prison walls. A lot of horrible things go on. If you go in there and you're not that abused, you will come out very abused. So, it's. Have you gone into prison ministry or gone into prisons at all?
No.
Mm-hmm.
And that must be something else. I can only imagine what that would be like. I mean, you know, that takes a really, really strong person to do that, in my opinion.
I didn't intend to do it, but I loved it. Once I did it,
I know.
I wanted more.
I was going to ask you, I mean, how did that happen? I mean, exactly. I mean, you said you didn't intend to, but Now you need to do it.
Okay. Originally, we didn't know this inmate. We knew the parents of a friend of his that was an inmate, a drug dealer. And he just was a punk 19-year-old kid that, you know, dealt drugs, got caught, went to prison. Then he met this male inmate that we got involved with, and they asked us if we wanted to go in and minister to him. Do you think we knew what we were doing? We didn't know anything. And in a way, it was good because we learned through the process of going back in again and again. And then he'd get out, go to the crack house, deal drugs, call me, get him in a rehab. He learned a little bit each time he'd go in a rehab. Most of them were Christian rehabs. But then he'd go back to drug dealing. And one rehab was right next to the public drunk tank where the prostitutes hung out, right next door.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he could just look out the window and whatever, you know. So,
right.
But he didn't ever get right as far as, you know, changing his lifestyle. Not,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he was a Christian. He knew Jesus, but he never changed his behavior. And
yeah.
I thought I could help him, and I couldn't help him. I wasn't whole.
Mm-hmm.
You can't help somebody
until
heal.
That's right. That's right, you know, and that's a very good point. That's exactly what I was going to say.
You think you can, and people try
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah.
But you'll end up maybe even falling down in their world, because I came really, really close to cheating on my husband. One night, my husband was in bed. I got tempted, and he was smoking on the deck. It was a nice summer evening. And he said to me, "You better go to your husband." And I went to bed and woke my husband up, and we made love. And he's like, "What got into you?" And I said, "You better thank Antonio. He just sent me to you rather than take advantage of me." So I give him that. I would have been his 401 woman that he slept with. He said he had 400 women that he, at least he knew the number, that he slept with. And he said, if I grew up in a home like you did, in a Christian home, I wouldn't have had that happen. But you know what? That's not true. You can grow up in
mm-hmm.
any home and go into a school or a church or a synagogue or, you know, a classroom or a camp or your grandfather's house, and it can happen anywhere. It doesn't matter if you're,
mm-hmm.
you know, raised a certain way or not.
Yep, absolutely. You know, that's awful good of him to do that, though. You know, I mean, that changes lives by the action that he did right there. I mean, think if it would have went the other way, you know.
I know it. Oh, yeah, my ministry would have been completely over. I never would have this kind of a testimony ever.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And I do love going in prisons because they're all different. And when we went in the women's prison in the Philippines, they make things in that prison. They bring in pottery, and they allow them to make things and paint things, and they can earn money.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody comes in, they can sell it and then give the money back home to their loved ones. But the women inmates, there were probably about a dozen of them that were Muslim, and the majority religion in the Philippines is either Muslim or Catholicism. And
mm-hmm.
President Duterte, who is going to be out of office soon, and another guy come in, he was raised Catholic and raped by a priest. And he left his Catholic faith, and his wife's a Christian. He ended up getting my book because his daughter works with traffickers in the Philippines, and she asked me to speak in her dad's church. She was not his daughter. It was a friend of his. works with trafficking, and she and her father's a Christian, and he asked me to come and speak in his church. And every time I spoke, I had an altar call, and sometimes we'd use baby oil, and it wasn't the oil that healed people, it was the anointing by the Holy Spirit, and people would line up, and we'd, you know, put the sign of the cross and pray for them if they wanted prayer. But the women danced for us, the Muslim women, and it was beautiful. They sang and danced for us before we spoke, my book promoter and my husband and I, and the Filipino pastor that invited us there. You know, he asked us to come to the Philippines because he said, I don't have any resources for my people, for clergy or my people. And come to find out, his wife was raped by a Filipino man that works in the school that this pastor, he ended up telling us that while we were together. And he said, in the Philippines, you can't get rid of the sex offender that's raped your wife. You have to keep them there in the school because that's the law. And he has so much anger and so much rage, he wants to kill him. You know, it's just like it's got so many tributaries to it, abuse does.
You know, I wanted to ask you, you've been over there, and you've seen the situation within those walls, so to speak. How do they look at pedophiles inside of the jail system?
Oh, my
there?
Goodness. Stick a broomstick up their rectum.
Really?
Yeah, we got involved with a ex-con named Charlie, whose street name was Nasty. He was a Boston gangster and a biker, and we were Christian motorcyclists and rode a motorcycle. My husband got him his heavy-duty license back because my husband worked in Boston at the time. And Charlie told me they flushed his... They didn't like him because he was a Boston gangster. I don't know how they found that out, because usually you don't tell what you've done. You go in prison, your lips are sealed. But somehow they can find out, or maybe they saw it on TV or something. Or somebody knows somebody that knows you. But they flushed Charlie's teeth down the toilet. He had false teeth one time. But there's gangs in prison. Horrible. I mean, and then if you're not a part of a gang, you're an outsider. So there's just so much. And there's different kinds of gangs. The blood core or something like that gang. We were in a prison in Texas, and we were brought into the prison in the gym, and then we broke off, and the volunteers got to be with one of the inmates in this big gym, so you weren't alone with them. And one of them, the one that I was with, lifted up his shirt and showed me the bullet in his chest. He got shot, and the bullet was still in there. So you learn something every time you go in to a place like that, that is like a nugget. You don't ever want to forget things like that.
Wow, that's unbelievable. I can only imagine what you've seen. I mean, it's just hard to fathom all the stories, the different kinds of people.
Right.
You know, and that to me is so important as far as the educational side of it right there. You know, because everybody's different. You know,
yes.
So it's... And to me, that's one of the most important.
And we're all children of God. God created us all. And I do believe they don't want to be like they are. You know, like that 60-year-old man in his wheelchair. He hadn't talked to his kids in 30 years. How do I change? I believe they want to change, but they don't know how. I believe sex offenders want to change, and I believe victims want to change. And for years, I had no clue. I didn't know how.
Yeah.
I searched and searched and I searched, and I didn't want to recreate the beauty out of ashes material that I ended up teaching. And I went to a graduation party, and I was about to face a sex offender. And I sat next to a woman at the party, and she said, "You're going to do what?" And when she found out, she said, I teach beauty out of ashes. And I want you to come back from that, from facing him. I'm going to pray for you. And she prayed for me right then and there. And I want you to come back, and I want to show you what I teach. And I ended up teaching it. And I've taught it for 9 years. Right now, I'm more in the media, getting lots and lots of media shows. So if you are
good
on Facebook, yeah, if you're on Facebook, you can Facebook me, and I can send you, or you can go on my website. They're all on there too. ListenToTheCry.org.
Absolutely.
And see my. You'll learn something different with each interview. Every interview is different.
Oh yeah. Anytime I ever see anything, you know, I always share it. You know, with you, because there's so much here that you offer, and we really thank you for everything. We could never, not ever get enough information from you. I mean, look where you've been. Look what you've been through. You know, you are just a gem here that everybody needs, because basically your humanitarian aid work to me is off the charts. I mean, it's something that you don't see every day. I mean, there's no way that people do what you do. I mean, there might be
Let me tell you, 12-year-olds, 11-year-olds were holding machine guns, and we were watched by ISIS at the Father's House Orphanage, which is in the middle of the jungle. You have to go across the river on a barge to get to the jungle to go to the orphanage in a run-down jeepney, which is like a ratty old bus with roll-down shades if it rains. And, I mean, we were in the middle of Borneo, so to speak, you know, in the jungle. We didn't know that ISIS was watching our every move. And they're like Hell's Angels. And we were, you know, like I said, part of motorcyclists, Christian motorcyclists. If the Hell's Angel wants your bike or wants your woman, they'll take over your whole block and they'll get it. That's like ISIS. So when we were going to go to the Philippines, I didn't know exactly. I knew that God wanted me to prepare 7 sermons. And at the time, I didn't understand the number. And somebody said, that's completion. And I thought, wow, that's deep. So when I went, I had tapes, I had videos, I had my sermons, I had my violence prevention work, and I had my testimonies, many of them. And so when we were going to go, our youngest son was very concerned. He said, Mom, what if one of the orphans tries to run away? You go in the middle of the night, you'll get a call and have to go get them. He was scared for my safety. So I asked the missionary, because I hadn't been there yet, and he said, Barb, he said, you don't have to be afraid. The drug lords, ISIS knows us well, and they're watching your every move, but you have guardian angels around you, and the guardian angels will surround you when you're there in the middle of the jungle. And the drug lords, when they see them, they're beings that are around you, you don't see them, but they do, they will run. And so I could tell, and that was a testimony in itself, I could tell my son not to worry about me. Pray for me, but don't worry about me going. And so we didn't have any worries. Now that I think back to what we did and what we saw and where we went, you know, it was a lot to go through. Every single day I was speaking. I got up at 4 o'clock in the morning the day after we arrived there.
Wow.
To speak to pastors and their wives and Bible school people. And,
so by doing,
you know,
7 different sermons like that, it was called completion.
That's how somebody said it is. It's completion. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. That's definitely understandable, you know, depending on what it is, but I can see that. I mean, if that's what it calls for, then yeah, you know. I bet that was really hard on you though, you know, as far as the time
They don't have any water. They don't have any running water. Some of the homes have no beds, so they sleep on plastic mats. One little tiny hut has 8 people in it, and they sleep one right after the other on a plastic mat. They had no toilet seats, and they have buckets to pour the in the toilet when you go, and you have to put the poop in a plastic baggie and put it in the, because it doesn't go down the toilet. That's how rustic it was. It was horrible.
Yeah.
Some days we woke up and there was no water, so they have a great big huge tank that you take a bucket and you can, you know, dump it over your head in the sink, and that's your hair wash.
Wow.
So, you know, it's really rustic.
Yeah, I can only imagine, Bo. I mean, down here, I know they have systems like that where they'll collect rainwater, you know.
Right.
And basically, it'll go into a huge, you know, bend, and you know, then, you know, that's not sanitary, though. You know, you don't want to be drinking that, you know, because it sits. Now, they'll purify it with chemicals like chlorine, different things like that. Yes, you can bathe in it, you know, but you don't want to be drinking it. You'd have to boil it, you know. So that's a lot to go through, and 'cause it's always a safety issue for sure, you know.
Yeah, well, we all came home sick and had to go to the ER. We all got real, But if you get sick in the Philippines, thank God we didn't. You can't get out of the hospital unless your whole bill is paid before you get out, and they don't feed you in the hospital. Relatives have to come and bring you your food. In the maternity ward, they had... We saw it. They had wrought iron beds back like in the 1940s and 50s, one after the other after the other, in a huge room. That was the maternity ward. And it's just so backwards that, you know, you can't even comprehend it until you see it. I was asked to speak in the largest hospital. 250 people came in, social workers, policemen and women, doctors, nurses. And I did my PowerPoint presentation. I developed two. One is teens and dating violence, why am I so messed up? And the other, and I've done that one a couple times. But this one was rescuing the prisoner when the prisoner was me. And I was treated like a celebrity. People were taking pictures of me afterwards, and I was giving out my books, giving away my books, and my Beauty Out of Ashes material. So the seeds have been planted there. I know that. And I don't know if I'll go back, but I would like to go back sometime.
Can we look at some of that you did, like maybe on YouTube, I believe?
You can. I have so many things on YouTube. Go on my listentothecry.org website.
Okay. So that's www.listentothecry.org. Okay.
Yeah. And I have a 4-minute YouTube documentary of my life about what happened to me, my backstory, on CBN Asia, the 700 Club. 3 days before I was to come back from the Philippines, a film crew flew from Manila, which is the most criminal trafficking place in the world. A film crew flew to our mission compound, and they actually flew and they drove to our mission compound and set up an interview with me and put it into 4 minutes. If you haven't seen that, you've got to see it, especially if you were raped by a clergy, because that's what I tell in that 4 minutes. And it's CBN Asia, the 700 Club show. That you got to see. Most of my interviews are maybe 35, 40 minutes long. You should get a book for your father, John. Hello?
Can you hear me okay?
Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yes.
I am here. I was saying
no,
yes.
I said it'd be good for you to get a book for your father to read so that he would understand you.
Yeah, that's very, very good.
It'd be a good gift. My book is only $20 plus shipping and handling.
$20, that's it?
Yep. best book you'll ever read because it's got a lot of answers and awareness. He'd understand you if he read it. He'd understand himself.
Mm-hmm.
How old is your dad?
He is 79.
Mm. And he'd probably read it.
Yeah, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. He's in good shape for 79, though, I will say that. You know, if you looked at him, yeah, you'd guess he's in his 70s, but not pushing 80, you know.
Right.
Very active. You know, he was an athlete like me. We're not built exactly the same. He's shorter than I am, but I'm tall. I'm like 6'2", you know, and he's like 5'9". So, yeah. But we do kind of look a lot, you know, a little bit in the face, and our personalities are pretty close in some areas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's been the biggest thing, though, is that, you know, me growing over the past 5-6 years, I have to say, it's been with him. It's been with him, you know, and my mom.
Mm.
And that's been that's been a good thing, you know.
Yes.
I think that our lives have changed a lot.
Sure.
Just on the better side of things, all the way around, you know. Absolutely.
Great.
I mean, if you know, one of these days, I think, you know, last time I did share my story with Annie one night, but I really didn't get into the details of a lot of things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those details have to do with what we talked about tonight, you know. Things to do with your parents, both sides of it, can get very deep, very emotional, you know, very testing. There are a lot of boundaries, you know, a lot of issues with trust and issues, you know, with having, you know, that love, you know, that bonding that you see with families that haven't been affected by childhood sex abuse.
Mm-hmm. Big difference. There's a lot of blame that goes along with it when you do share.
Yes, lots of blame. Yep.
That's hard. It's hard because
Not only that, you know what, Bobby? It also deepens into the grandparents and to the kids.
Exactly.
You know, so next thing you know, it's affecting, you know, 4, 5
generations.
Six generations. And what you did with me, it was six generations. If you want to count my youngest daughter, who's 10, and you want to go all the way up to my grandparents, you know, and plus I had great grandparents then. You know?
Right.
Yes. I mean, now we're talking 7, really. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I know we have about 2 minutes left, a little bit over 2 minutes. Annie, would you like to jump in for a minute and say anything?
I want to thank Barbara for her wonderful storytelling. I'm looking forward to calling you and ordering your book from you.
Thank you. I will do that.
Mm-hmm. I can't
wait. It all goes back to help with humanitarian aid work. So every book that I sell goes back.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
And I did have a lot of comments as we were going along, and I was writing them all down, but that's all past now. So
well, you can always call me, you know, and we can talk on the phone. Well, I don't mind.
I will. Yeah, I will call you. Mm-hmm.
Where are you from?
California.
Thank you for calling.
Mm-hmm. John, are you there?
I want to thank both of you all. For being here tonight. This has been really a good show. We talked about some very important stuff tonight, and there's a lot more to talk about. You know, we just touched on some things, you know, with parents and you know, facing a lot of issues, you know, regarding childhood sex abuse and how things are handled. And you know, with our special guest tonight, who's Barbara Joy Hansen. Oh, Bobby Joy. She has Listened to the Cry of the Child. So her website is www.listentothecry.org. So we have about a minute left, a little bit less. So if you want to leave us with something to tell everyone out there.
Okay, I would like to. When your kids are grown, They won't care about and remember the money you spent on them, but they'll care about and remember the time you spent with them.
So I agree.
Say that again. Say that one more time.
When your kids are grown, they won't care or remember the money you spent on them. They'll care more and remember the time that you spent with them.
Mm-hmm. I think that's absolutely perfect.
Thank you.
And Bobby, thank you so much. And Annie, thank you for being here tonight. And I'm looking
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Talking to y'all soon, okay? Good night, everybody.